Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Bulls on Tap. I am your boy Buzz, and of course I am joined by my dude Goose, aka Bulls Scripted, and we are here with another special episode of Bulls on Tap. We are joined by our dude Tony Gill from NBC Sports Chicago. He's going to join us, talk about Bulls front office moves, personnel stuff, his favorite game, how he became a fan, what he's been up to. He's been producing some awesome podcasts over there that I'm sure he will plug so we can spread, you know, some word about that. So do some house cleaning here. Be sure to go to ontapsportsnet.com for all your Chicago sports literature and podcasting needs. Following us on Twitter at BullsOnTap, at OnTapSportsNet. Follow my dude Goose at BullsScripted and follow me at BuzzOnTap. So strap back and get ready. It's going to be a fun episode. Everybody, we are very excited. Wow, can't even talk. I'm so nervous already. We're very excited to be joined by Tony Gill of NBC Sports Chicago. Goose and I have some questions for him, much like we had last week for Herb. Talk about the direction of the team, some fun little tidbits in here and what he's expecting, you know, through the new front office. So, Tony, I want to be the first one to welcome you on the show, man. Thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thanks, guys, for inviting me back. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, to get with the first question, man, you had a huge career change recently. You went over from 670 to NBC Sports Chicago. So before we got into any Bull stuff, man, I just kind of wanted to ask you what your experiences have been like over there now that you're doing the podcasting game over there and stuff and producing.
It's been great. They made the transition fairly easy, and as you guys have already know. Lawrence is already over there. Jason Goff is already over there. So it wasn't, completely unfamiliar. And I've reached out to NBC Sports Chicago, like, over the course of my career a bunch of times. They've had me on a couple of their podcasts and shows before I started working there. So it was really simple. It was really easy transition. Everybody was willing to work, and so was I. So just going there being able to expand creatively, get my hands in a bunch of different things other than just, audio and sound and stuff. It's really a free-flowing workspace that I personally needed to kind of expand. And I love radio, and I still love radio, and it's always going to be my first love, is the reason why I wanted to join sports media. But radio was strict in terms of what I could do creatively, and at NBC Sports Chicago, there really is no kind of halt on anything that or an idea that I may have. So I'm loving it, man. So far, this is my first. Actually, this week I took my first vacation in about 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I've been kind of grinding, through this whole thing, really, really, almost straight through without any breaks. So it felt good to kind of feel like, hey, I think I've worked long enough to actually at least get a week just to kind of step away from everything. So it's been fun so far.
That's awesome, man. And we had Kevin Anderson on two episodes ago. It went Kevin, Herb, and then you had come on today. And Kevin Anderson speaks very highly of you and NBC Sport and all the work that goes over in NBC Sports Chicago. I talk to Kevin quite often. And I love the work over there. But when he was on, he had mentioned this awesome podcast that you had helped produce. And that was the one where Jordan was, like, practicing with the Warriors. And I just wanted to talk to you about, like, what awesome projects you've been working on over there since you've been there. I don't expect you to throw out any teasers of things that are going to be dropping in the future. But the projects you've gotten to work on, what are you, like, most proud of?
Well, I think at this point in my career, it's got to be our Sports Uncovered episode for NBC. That you mentioned before with Michael Jordan, I'm Back, where we uncover where he practiced with the Warriors for a couple of days. That's probably the biggest project that I've gotten to work on in my career so far. Second would be the Behind the Headlines series that I did with Julie DeCaro. Mm-hmm. That's kind of with The Last Dance, kind of picked up steam a little bit more. Kind of like I had a second wind to it with that project. But yeah, man, this NBC project was big, and it's being pushed by NBC National. So there was a lot of pressure not to mess up. But it was a fun project getting to, you know, do those interviews and be a part of those interviews for not only the television documentary that you guys that we premiered on NBC Sports Chicago, the TV special of I'm Back, but this was more in depth. The podcast was definitely more in depth. A lot more interviews to comb through, a lot more sound, and it took a week straight of just honing in to create that. And I don't know if you guys can notice. I hope you can't. I tweaked it a little bit, but a lot of that recording I had to do in my closet.
What, really?
Because I mean, our studio wasn't on. I mean,
because
of the pandemic.
Right.
And I couldn't use my, you know, my old stomping grounds at the Score because it was the same thing. Their studios were shut down as well. So I kind of had to make the best out of a real crappy situation. So I had to set up a makeshift studio in my closet and had to record a lot of the voice tracking there. So there was a lot of hurdles and obstacles to get through, but it's by far probably the most proud I've been of a project in my career so far.
Yeah, man, I've been following you for a long time, you know, and everything you've done, whether it was at the Score or now you being at NBC, I've been a big fan of, you know, and I've gotten to, you know, talk to you countless times, not, you know, face-to-face or personally or anything like that, but over Twitter just about our Bulls ideas and you know, the direction of the team or questions or whatever. So I'm happy to see you in a job that you really dig, you know, a career, not even a job, a career that you really dig about a team that you love too. So, I mean, that's gotta be awesome. So we'll get into some Bulls questions. Goose, you want to ask the first one here, man? Get your voice on the mic.
I mean, I guess we can start with the obvious one. What is your optimism level at with the changes in the front office, with the addition and subtraction of some old faces, but bringing in Mark Eversley and Arturis Karnisovas?
I think it's pretty high, and I think Bulls fans should be really excited about, you know, the change in the front office. I mean, it's been a long time coming. And you don't want to get in too much of an angry mode, like what took so long, but it's done. It's done now, and the necessary changes were made with their front office. With their already moves that they've done, that our tourist has done so far, picking up a contract guru from New Orleans and picking up Mark Eversley from the Sixers with his players, with his player connection with the league, with his work through Nike. Like it's really kind of like the Megazord is forming together in Chicago.
And Power Rangers, I love it.
Yeah, it's it's really a sight to see because you thought you would never see it. You thought ownership would be too stubborn. You thought that they were okay with just being the team that Michael Jordan was on at that one time, but they finally stepped it up and decided to change course and said we aren't up to date, we aren't with the rest of the league, and hopefully this new pairing of Mark Eversley and Arturis Karnisovas will help propel the organization into relevancy amongst their NBA teams and NBA players.
Oh, absolutely. And it's an underrated move that I think goes by in this front office because everybody's talking about AK and Eversley is the guy that you brought up before is from New Orleans, J.J. Polk, being a cap guru as he is. I think that's really going to help out, too. Having people from different spectrums coming to work together can't be anything but good, in my opinion. You know, you have different opinions, you have different styles, and once you can, if you can mesh all those together, I think it's going to be a great marriage. But looking at the roster right now, we asked Herb this last week as well. Do you think anybody's untouchable? I mean, is there anybody untouchable in your eyes or somebody like, and maybe not in a front office sense, like where you're actually working in the front office? I guess it's kind of like a two-part question. It's like, is there anybody untouchable in the front office sense or anybody you don't want to see go that you would like to see them build around?
They've done like a lot of working with, you know, in the front office, almost everybody of importance is gone. So all those key decision makers that were here aren't in those positions anymore. So they've done a pretty decent job of clearing house from the front office aspect. From a player standpoint, I would say, here's the thing. I don't think Mark Eversley or Arturas takes this job if they didn't believe that there was talent on it, if the cupboard was bare. So if they took this job with the aggression that they have so far, they really think that there's something to this young roster. So it, when you ask that question, the assumption is that either, you know, Laurie, Zach, Wendell, or Kobe, Kobe White would be the ones that would be gone. And I don't think they want to move off of any of those players just yet. We see how they're handling the Jim thing, where they're kind of really doing their due diligence on Jim Boylan. Even though there's a lot of reports out there that they already made their decision on Jim and just want to take it, you know, kind of day by day with that. So that means if they're taking this long with a coach who potentially is already out the door, I don't think they will be willing to move off of any of those key four players just yet before they actually see them in a best case scenario. I don't think that as it currently stood before they got there, the players were put in the best position to succeed. So how do you have an accurate evaluation of each player if you don't put the best things around them and then seeing what they have to do? And all these players are under, you know, nice contracts in terms of organization. Zach is on an incredible contract. With another couple years left on that. Laurie is coming up on his, at the end of his rookie deal, so he has something to play for. And the Bulls still have his rights as well. So Kobe, right? He was a rookie, you know, last season. And Wendell Carter is still under his rookie deal. So the four people that you want to see, everybody else can be moved. Like, everybody else is an interchangeable piece in terms of the rest of that roster. But in terms of those four, I just don't see them moving on from those. I mean, they're lottery picks. If you want to see what they have, they're going to try and move on from Jim. The rumors serve correct. They're going to try and get the best coach for this roster, and they're going to get the right player development people around them so they can, one, stay healthy for an entire year, and two, start actually doing some winning basketball and. That front office is going to be able to see what this group is really made of once they are put in the best position that they can.
I think you're along our thought process too, and Goose, I'll let you speak on this in a second as well. But I mean, I really don't want to see any of the core four move because I think we've been kind of robbed of it. You know, last year with all the injuries that we dealt with, and now even a shortened season due to the pandemic as well, and then even the year before Kobe got here. With Wendell battled injuries his rookie year, Lowry was, you know, struggling a bit, and you know, Zach has just been a monster. So I mean, I really don't want to move on from Zach. I think with good coaching, he could be really good. Goose, I know that you said you saw those jerseys on sale and it scared you a little bit, huh?
Yeah, man. I've always felt like sporting goods stores, maybe they just ride on rumors, and that's when they decide on sale. But a lot of the times, pay close attention. Those jerseys go on sale. Buddy's about to be out of town. Happened with Jimmy Butler.
That's right. You know, it did happen with Jimmy Butler.
It did. I mean, that's the one that I can remember the most. Ben Gordon. I remember my dad just bought me a Ben Gordon jersey. He was at Sears for whatever reason, and they had him pushed to the front of the door. You know, clearance on sale, wasn't traded yet. Brought that sucker home. I put it on like a week or two later. Ben Gordon has been traded to the Pistons. So, I mean, maybe it's just coincidence. Maybe they ride on rumors and they take a shot. Like, hey, we'll take a little hit just in case if we can get that many out the door. But, no, I like the point that Tony made about the front office's approach to the coaching situation, which they already see is pretty much decided upon. You probably would want to give the four aforementioned players their, you know, their chance to prove to you that they are who they were supposed to be when they were drafted seventh overall. So, because all three of them were drafted seventh overall.
As our dude C Red Fred says with his seven, you know, 777, it's time. It's time to get it rolling, man. They're going to be great, you know. Now, I know this isn't on the outline, but they did have, I'm going to butcher the name, so please somebody save me before I do it. He played in the league. God. It was reports came out that Ime Udoka. Did I say that right? I hope I did, because I feel always bad butchering people's names. I'm so bad at it. But he is the lead candidate for the Chicago Bulls head coaching job. Now, last when we were on with Herb, we were hearing a lot of Adrian Griffin or maybe Kenny Atkinson. Maybe those were just rumors. But, Tony, I mean, you know, with this, them doing the due diligence with Boylan and kind of keeping him around to maybe either if that's to appease the people that want him to stay or not, out of those coaching candidates, who are you looking for to lead this team? I know you're a huge NBA head, and I know you know a lot of the coaches around the league that are available, such as Dave Yeager, Kenny Atkinson, Adrian Griffin, Udoka. You know, everybody keeps saying Mark Jackson to me. I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't mind that at all. But is there anybody that you're kind of looking at as well?
The Adrian Griffin candidacy early on when this happened really piqued my interest, because a couple things that I'm looking for is championship experience. And not even as a player or anything like that. Just have you been a part of coaching staffs that have won championship rings? And two, almost as important to me, is can you connect with your players and understand that, of course, every coach wants to have a style of play, but can you tweak your system to best fit your roster? And I think that second part has really what's been missing from this team so far under Jim Boylan is the importance of the style of play superseded the best fit for the roster. Even through Lauri Markkanen's struggles, when we asked, you know, Jim Boylan, well, why isn't Lauri producing even when he was healthy? The answer was he just needs to be on the rebounds more. And that always bothered me, because if you believe that Lauri Markkanen is a cornerstone piece for your franchise, that you believe he has all-star or superstar talent, in what scenario in NBA history do you tell that player, go grab rebounds, that's where you're going to get your touches? Like, that's never happened before, literally, in the history of basketball, if you think he's that player. In which I think a lot of fans and media members think that Lauri's potential is on an all-star level. And we didn't get to see that all year, even when he was healthy. And that just kind of confused everyone. So being able to get the most out of your player when something isn't going right, you find out what's going wrong, and being able to change it, it's not saying your system is not working. It's in fact, you should get more respect from the media and the players to recognize that something isn't working and then being able to change it. And I think getting a coach in there that can do those two, that has those two things, is the key. And I thought Adrian Griffin would be a good candidate for that. But now with reports saying that the 76ers assistant coach, again, I'm going to butcher his name as well. That's why I didn't help you out.
I'm so glad you're with me.
I'm just going to lean on Udoka. He's been a part of the San Antonio Spurs, mm-hmm. So he has that experience. He's young enough to connect with the players as well. And Mark Eversley, I'm pretty sure he's pushing for him since he came from Philadelphia. So he has an insight into what type of man he is. Udoka is. So again, with assistant coach and coaches that doesn't have prior head coaching experience, that's kind of like the Bulls thing,
right? Right. Yeah,
they always have hired coaches with zero head coaching experience, which is a negative if you want to look at it that way. But I think at this point, it's so early in Arturis and Mark Eversley's tenure that, at least to this point, we're going to have to lean on their knowledge of the situation and what they think this organization needs until they're proven wrong, until they make that first misstep that we can kind of say, hey, you know, keep them accountable for. But right now, it's all on them to kind of make that right choice. But I'm not going to be angry between Atkinson or Udoka or Griffin.
Goose, I didn't get your opinion on Udoka. What were you thinking about him? Because I know that we recorded with Herb, and then like 2 days later that news came out. So I was wondering what your opinion was on that as well before we move on to the next question.
Well, the irony of Ime, I looked it up on Wiki. The pronunciation of his last name was still a little, I wasn't going to attempt it. But Ime, they both won championships with the Spurs in 2014. They were both on Pop's staff in 2014 when they beat the Heat. And obviously, Jimbo has the only other two rings from the 90s when MJ took his little hiatus being assistant with Rudy T and the Rockets. So, I don't know. I think that's kind of funny that we're going back to the Pop tree, and I'm sure it'll be great to hear about the Pop tree when it works out this time. He is actually an ex-NBA player as well. He had short stints with the Portland Trail Blazers, the Spurs, the Kings, and then he eventually ended up with the Spurs before retiring from the NBA and coming back as an assistant coach in 2012. So I think that connection of being a player, understanding the grind, being through that situation not that long ago, less than a decade ago, that'll be very relatable. He'll understand the locker room setting that goes on when the coach leaves the room, when the players talk like, dude, coach is fucking crazy. He's going to understand all that stuff. So I think going with a young, very connected to the situation he's about to be teaching in, I think that would be a good way to go. I think he's actually moved to probably my top candidate out of the rumored names that we could be in the running for.
All right, man. Well, I'm glad that you're optimistic about this one for sure. Another front office question for you here, Tony. We touched on this with Herb as well. And Herb was more so kind of, in my boat about it. Correct me if I'm wrong, Goose. But with Paxson, do you think that he is still going to have a major say of what's going on? Or do you think he's just going to be more of a guy to kind of lean on if you have questions, since, you know, AK and Mark are so new to the city and stuff like that? I mean, do you think that Paxson is still going to have a giant say-so within the organization, even though he's now just an advisor?
No. I'm going to lean on what KC Johnson reported for NBC Sports Chicago, and what he's been reporting about John Paxson's role is it will be whatever Arturas wants. And that's going to be as little or as much as Arturas needs him. And I think Arturas is confident enough in his skill, in himself, to make tough decisions and hard decisions. You saw as soon as he got hired, he got rid of Gar. I don't think he asked permission do that.
He was just like, we met, and it was like, nah, I'm good, bro. See you later.
I mean, he's fired the longtime trainer, Jeff Tanaka. I don't think he asked permission. I don't think he's here to ask permission to do anything. I don't think he would have taken this job if he had a handcuff of, well, you got to follow up with John Paxson. I don't think that's how Arturas rolled on this, and I don't think he takes his job if that was the case. And Casey's been reporting it in his pieces a lot, that John Paxson was one of the originators of the Bulls actually changing this and wanting to be more update with how the organization runs. And he's going to just be a tool that's there for Arturas and Mark going forward. Whatever he's getting paid, he's still getting paid regardless.
Right.
At this point, I just don't see John Paxson coming out to the media answering questions or being responsible for anything of importance, because I don't think it will look great on the organization if he still has a lot of say-so on what's going on. And I think Arturas and Mark understand that. I remember specifically when Mark was doing his media, he mentioned that he wanted to make the Bulls cool again.
Right.
And I don't think John Paxson oozes cool. And I don't think Jim Boylan oozes cool.
They both kind of just ooze Mr. Clean. One skinny, one a little hefty. but Mr. Clean, and I'm glad that somebody mopped him out of here.
Jimbo's
still lingering, but
and I've talked to both of them, you know, personally, just kind of one on one. I mean, they're nice guys, and you know, respectable, professional, and all that. But I just don't think they ooze cool for this organization, and I think that's part of it. It's not just about the results. You got to get the respect of basketball fans across the world that, all right, the Bulls are legit. The Bulls are is an organization to be reckoned with and is going to be reckoned with going forward. That when you see the Bulls on your schedule, tickets for away games should be selling out because the Bulls are coming to town. And just having that cachet of what it was, and obviously, you know, Michael being the greatest player ever, I think helps boost that. But still, there was a swagger, even with the Rose years. There was a swagger about being a Chicago Bull or being a Bulls fan that you brought, and they want to bring that back. So I think Arturs and Mark are doing this together with their group, and the people that were here before that are still there. I think they'll just be used as kind of like sounding boards.
Right, and you know, to your point of them being nice guys, Goose and I were lucky enough to talk to Jim at that was the open practice, right? We got to talk to him. He was a very nice guy. I got to, believe it or not, Gar Foreman bought me a drink at the first season ticket holder open event that they did at the United Center this past year, and he was actually a nice guy. He bought me, we were drinking Jack and Cokes. He went and bought a Jack and Coke for me. You know, nice guy. Hey, man, you got me a drink. You're in forever. So you got my heart. But, you know, I don't think they're bad guys. I just – there's a lot of things that they kind of did within the media, which I didn't like. Jim was very short with a lot of people. I think you asked him a couple tough questions when you were with 670, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, I didn't like the way he kind of reacted to certain things. And there was one thing that KC had asked him, and KC's been on our show as well. You know, I've gotten to talk to him quite often just through Twitter DMs or whatever. Super cool guy, and I just didn't like the way Jim reacted. I understand the guy's back's against the wall, but when you do say, you know, you ooze cool, like it doesn't really, not that I'm cool at all, I'm kind of lame, but you know, when it drips when it drips out of somebody, you can kind of, you know, pick that up. And I don't think that the younger players that are coming into the NBA, seeing, you know, hypothetically, if you're a younger player and you're coming to the Chicago Bulls right now, and you kind of see how Zach has kind of reacted or how Lowry kind of reacted during the podcast that he was on in Finland, It doesn't seem like a super didn't, or at least it didn't before the front office changes happened, but a welcoming and kind of adaptive place to be. It was kind of like, this is the way the Chicago Bulls run, and this is it. And to bring in some understanding guys that are going to try to work and, you know, elevate their talent to a top tier is probably going to be more attractive. And like Mark Eversley said, it'll make it a cool destination. You know, you want to be cool again. Michael Jordan played here. It's one of the greatest NBA. It's up there in the greatest NBA franchise of all time. Still, even though we've been pretty not great. But, you know, speaking of talent, I want to get into the last kind of player question with you, and that's getting to Zach, because you already had touched on Lowry and what you think he can be with the right coaching, and, you know, you think he can be an all-star level player and the hopes that they have for him. But do you think Zach LaVine can be a 1A guy? Do you think he could be the guy? I mean, we see that he has the scoring. We saw his numbers go up this year. Yeah, he was taking a higher volume of shots, but he was hitting those shots too. It wasn't like he was just chucking. That was not happening. He was playing very good basketball. So I was just wanted to get your opinion on Zach being a 1A guy.
I like to when I think about that stuff, who is a build around guy versus a build with guy. I like to have some previous examples. I mean, there's been, you know, decades and decades of basketball. There's got to be somebody with that was in a similar position as Zach, and it's tough to see it, if I'm being honest, that he's a build-around guy versus a build-with guy. I think certainly he's a build-with guy. I'm not 100% sure he's a build-around guy, and because I just haven't seen it. I mean, I guess you would – if I had to make one precedent – that may have been similar to Zach LaVine, maybe Victor Oladipo, in terms of a player who came on later in his career and was able to be a number one guy for a franchise. Obviously, they you know, you don't see them winning a championship. That's also another thing is, all right, where are your expectations? You know, like Victor Oladipo, he's a fantastic player, all-star player. Do you see him leading a team to a championship?
Right.
I mean, I don't know where your expectations are. If the expectation is championship level, you pretty know quickly that guy. There wasn't a, well, let's wait and see with those type guys. And those guys win the championship. LeBron James, we can just kind of go down the list of instant star players that you recognize that, okay, he's a build-around guy. Ja Morant, Zion Williamson, instant impact once they stepped on the court. And Zach LaVine didn't do that.
Right.
He didn't do that in Minnesota, and he didn't do that in Chicago. And you can say a bunch of different things, but, you know, injuries and stuff like that, but once you see it, you see it. And once you know, you know. And for us to be talking about Zach LaVine going into his 7th NBA season, and we still aren't 100% sure if he's that guy, then he's probably not that guy. I do think that in order for the Bulls to win a championship, they need a player that's better than Zach LaVine.
Right.
But, yeah, I think you can certainly build with him. But in terms of, again, anything's possible. I mean, there's new precedents set, you know, every year with a player. Somebody does something different. But according to, you know, looking at history and how this thing goes, you know pretty quickly if that dude's a dude. And I don't think Zach LaVine is that dude. I think he's a very talented player. I think he's highly skilled, and I think he can be a two or three guy on a championship team, but I don't think he's a number one guy.
I've seen a lot of comparisons, and I love the Basketball Reference website, and Goose, feel free to hop in here, but I've seen a lot of comparisons to early Monte Ellis from Golden State. Mm-hmm. Is a very high-volume scorer. Obviously, Zach's percentages were up more than Monte's were. Mm-hmm. Well, this past last year, right? You know, he was in fuego on scoring. We can't deny it, but... I saw a lot of comparisons to that. I think that Goose and I are in the same boat here, and again, I'll let you get to that. I don't think that he is going to be the guy, but I do think that he can be a guy that's there to help, you know, alleviate pressure, especially scoring pressure, mm-hmm. off of a future star player, whoever that may be, whoever comes to Chicago or whoever we get lucky enough to draft, because, I mean, if we get 7 again, I don't know. But, you know, Goose, you want to chime in on that?
And I'm going to stick to two Bulls references here that'll, you know, resonate with fans. Jamal Crawford and Ben Gordon, two players who I loved growing up as a Bulls fan, but they just weren't ever going to be a championship guy. And they were just awesome shot makers, and they could score at will. And it's hard because Zach, I think, is on a different level now that his shot and his shot-making ability has elevated to that somewhat elite tier of being able to hit any shot on the floor with that athleticism that he's always had. It's scary to trade somebody like Zach LaVine because that athleticism plus that kind of shooting touch isn't something that you see together. 6 or 7 years in the league, he still is only 25 years old. And the beginning of his career was pretty much shadowed by the fact that the Timberwolves drafted Andrew Wiggins in that same draft. And then they got Karl-Anthony Towns after that. So instead of being 2, he got pushed to 3 on the development totem pole. And I think that's one thing that you have to attribute to Zach is given how he got put on the back burner in Minnesota, on the focus on him to be that player, he did it all himself. And that work ethic has continued to show through every year. He improves. So hopefully, if we do trade him, he doesn't continue to improve because that'll hurt. And if we hang on, you know, maybe he shows us something next year with a real coach and he gets an extension. I don't know. Zach's an enigma to me.
Right. I was about to say, you took the words right out of my mouth. He's an enigma. You know, I don't know if his work ethic will propel him into being something that is definitely what we want or not. But, you know, all we could do is watch him play in a new system and find out with actually, you know, a good coach behind him and someone strong. So, Tony, we're going to move into your all-time Bulls starting lineup. We gave ours in the last episode with Herb. I'm down to hear yours. I can't wait to hear it.
Okay, let's I think I go Rose, obviously. Jordan, Pippen, probably Rodman. And probably Joe King.
You see, a lot of people hesitate at the five because, you know, a lot, you know, Artis Gilmore was one of them and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But with the people that we've asked, it's been pretty similar to that. I was really surprised you didn't pick Captain Kirk Heinrich as your point guard. I was shocked by that. I'm kidding. I get a lot of hate because of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Bulls haven't had a lot of, you know, Hall of Fame type players.
Right.
During this history, so I think the starting five is pretty obvious. It's just how do you feel out the rest of that roster? I think is a bit more interesting.
I've been waiting for people to like throw in their personal touch and add like, you know, like because their homerism, because I'm a huge homer, but mine's pretty similar to yours. I think I had Horace Grant at the four, but like, you know, I was joking with Herb last week. I'm like, I'm going to throw, you know, Kirk Heinrich in there, and Herb just stopped me. He's like, are you kidding me? I'm just like, Herb, I'm joking. I joke. He'd be my sixth man. You know, I'm joking. And then, you know, of course, Goose hopped on me. What about Ben Gordon? You know, but it's fun. You know, they haven't had a lot of Hall of Fame talent, and it is pretty self-explanatory. I mean, Derrick Rose is – I wish he would have stayed healthy, man. And what you guys are doing on NBC Sports Chicago right now, I can't remember what game it is tonight. Do you know off the top of your head what game it is tonight? Because last night was the Detroit game.
I don't. I've been completely unplugged.
Oh, you're on vacation. I forget. Yeah, you're on vacation.
So I just say whatever's on, that's what I'm watching. Right. I think it may be a game winner. I can't remember which. It may be the Milwaukee game
at the Bradley Center. You're right. I think that is tonight. Yeah, I've been living. I have a 2-year-old daughter, man, and she doesn't understand what she's watching. You know, she's little. You know, but I made her sit down and watch. I was like, "Do you want to witness greatness really quick?" And I was just, you know, like just trying to get her to watch Derrick Rose. And my wife's like, "Oh, you already know what happens. Can't we watch something else?" I'm like, "Okay, we're not gonna watch a rerun of Friends again. We're gonna watch Derrick Rose dominate because I don't have anything right now." You know.
But you know what? Rob Schaefer wrote a piece today that came out today, I think, on NBCSportsChicago.com, actually arguing why Derek should be considered as a Hall of Famer or what he needs, what's left for him to do to be considered a Hall of Famer. I thought it was a very interesting argument because I always thought after he got hurt, I always thought that he's going to be the only MVP in NBA history not in the Hall of Fame. And it started to look that way for a long time until that resurgence in Minnesota under, you know, head coach Tom Thibodeau, and what he's been doing now with Detroit. It's going to be a tough go. He's going to have to play the long range game. He's going to have to play in the league a while, kind of rack up those points and assist numbers, to kind of get considered in that conversation. Because I don't know. I'm not 100% sure if – I know he's not first ballot if he goes. But, I mean, youngest MVP, you know, in the NBA history, that's got to do something. You know, that's got to do something. And I'm not sure just yet because his career isn't over. I guess we'll have this conversation as soon as he retires officially. But, yeah, if he just continues to pick up some of these raw numbers, just to get him in the conversation, and you know, kind of keep his head down, doesn't cause anybody any trouble or anything, which I don't think, you know, he will. He may find himself in the Hall of Fame, but it's going to be a tough go for him.
You'll see me at the top of that mountain, dying on that hill, that he should be in the Hall of Fame. And I'm a large homer, man. I'm not gonna lie to you. I try to look at things outside the spectrum, and you know, even when we do our podcast, I try to be as fair as possible. But when it comes to Derek, I lose all sight of that, and I'm just I will die on that hill that I think that he should be in the Hall of Fame. That dude was something else, and injuries robbed him, and it was just that one still hurts to talk about. You know, I was at the ACL game, man. Mm-hmm. First round against the 76ers. you want to talk about, there's two times in my lifetime of being at games. I'm lucky enough, you know, where I come from as a person is I come from Blue Island, Illinois. I lived in a one bedroom trailer with my dad, but God damn it, we had Bears and Bulls season tickets. You know, like that's what we had. And I fell in love with those teams. And there's two sporting events I've been at in my life where I could hear, like, you know, a pin drop. And it was when Derek went down, and it was the double doink. Those are the two games you could hear people breathing next. I mean, it was just silent. Unbelievably silent. And, you know, I'll die on that hill. You know, you can get that tattooed on me. I don't give a shit. Derek Rose for MVP. I'm all for it all day. So just to let people know, how did you become a Bulls fan? Are you from the area? You know, did you just kind of fall in love with the team? How did that happen?
I guess it's, you know, kind of natural. You know, you grow up, you know, I grew up in West Englewood. So,
right on.
And we love basketball. My dad was a huge basketball fan and a huge Jordan fan. So it just kind of seeped into me and my siblings. That was what we got to watch. If we loved the game, you know, we had the Bulls, and we had basketball, and, that kind of helped propel my fandom as a Bulls fan coming up, was my dad. And I mean, he had all those, Jordan tapes. He had just taped random games of Jordan that, you know, we would watch, and stuff like that to kind of just boost that fandom, of the Chicago Bulls.
Right.
I vaguely remember like that, the Last Dance championship year, vaguely. I remember a couple things, but not a whole lot. So that's one I do, remember, but yeah, that's what it was. If we love basketball, and the Bulls were the team that we got to watch the most. So, but one thing my dad didn't do, he didn't really force us just to be a Bulls fan. Like he helped make us a basketball fan first. And that's kind of what I lean on first is like, I the Bulls are my local team. Obviously grew up here my whole life in Chicago. But basketball was the number one thing, like enjoy watching good basketball being played and fun basketball being played.
Right.
And that's where it's like, oh man, like my favorite all time team is the We Believe Warriors. That's my personal favorite all time.
That was 2003.
Yeah, that was a little bit later. That was
Baron Davis was on that squad,
yeah,
right?
Baron Davis, Monte Ellis, Steven Jackson,
okay. Mikael
Bridges, Don Nelson as the coach.
Right, okay.
Yeah, they upset the Mavs that year, being the AC that We Believe team. So yeah, just understanding where greatness is and understanding why players are great and all of that encompasses everything about basketball that I love first. So yeah, I can't really root for the Bulls, you know, since I cover the team. So I kind of had to lay some of that down
the put the homerism to the side.
It's always going to be there. Like I can't deny that, you know, I am a Chicago fan and a Bulls fan. But yeah, the love of basketball came, you know, along with watching the Bulls.
Right on. And what's your favorite game you've ever been to at the United Center?
As a kid, we didn't go to a lot of Bulls games. So I will have to lean on my more adult work with covering the team. And I think I'm going to go with the Klay Thompson breaking the record in the United Center.
Damn it, Tony.
That game was like amazing to see just how great that Warriors team was, for one, in person, and just to see just kind of how far the Bulls were from being a championship level team. Like all of those mixed feelings was because you had to appreciate the basketball that was being played. Like it was amazing to watch what they were doing. They were literally playing games with inside the game. Like right. They weren't playing against the Bulls. They were playing basically for their own personal interest. And to see Kevin Durant and Steph recognizing Klay is on this historic pace, for them to be like, all right, we're not playing against the Bulls anymore. Now our goal is to get Klay to get this record, which he got that day, that night. And it was, I remember that the Bulls locker room, it was quiet and ugly in there. And I mean, all you could hear was just laughs coming from the Warriors, the visitors locker room, because I mean, that's how good they were, that night. And that's how good Klay was that night. So yeah, that's probably the most memorable Bulls game that I've been at.
It, oh, wow. Goose, I heard you squirming over there a little bit.
Oh, no, I'm just laughing at the fact that Tony's definitely a closet Warriors fan. We believe Warriors. Favorite game he's ever been to, Warriors. I think he might be a little ashamed to root for a super team, but I think it's in there.
Oh, I'm not. No, it's in there. It's in there. It's one of my favorite players of all time. It's in there.
Oh, man. I bet that game in person, though, had to be nuts, man. I covered that game for the webs. You know, we do the on tap thing, man. And, you know, we cover games. We do the post game podcasts every night. And I had covered that game. That one was like, and you know, you pride yourself as a fan sometimes. And I never say I'm more of a fan than anybody else, but I do like to admit, like, you know, when they are on, I watch every game. This was one where I was like, you know what, dude, I might have to go upstairs right now. Like, this is it. Like, was I watching great basketball? Did I know I was? Yeah, of course I did. I played growing up. I mean, I wasn't anything spectacular. I'm 5'9", 150 pounds soaking wet, you know, but I played the game, and I couldn't get over what was happening. And Klay was in fuego. I mean, the whole Warriors team was. I mean, he just broke the record. I mean, it was just what an unbelievable. That was unbelievable. I am taken back, though. That was your favorite game that you've been to in person. I was gonna hit
I got to watch history.
You're right.
A lot of people, even though it was at the detriment of the Bulls, but just understanding the scope of what that game was and what it meant in the, you know, the pantheon of performances in NBA history, I was there to witness it,
right,
in person. So that I don't take that lightly. I don't take that for granted. That's going to be a memory that I'm going to share with my kids and grandkids and all of that. So when I point them to the, you know, the basketball reference or whatever comes of basketball reference in the next 20 to 25 years, you say, you see that record? You see that right there? I was there for that.
Ooh. Yeah, I've said my favorite game was the, if you remember back in 2011, the 20th anniversary of the Bulls championship, when Jordan came back and he talked about Derrick Rose. And basically, he didn't really talk about Derrick Rose, but he said, oh, this team you have here, you guys are going to get a couple more banners up there. I was at that game. I can't remember who it was. And, you know, Derrick hit like 4 threes in the first quarter. You know, I mean, he was just on fire. And, you know he was probably lit up because of Jordan's speech. You know, I mean, Derrick Rose standing next to Michael Jordan, I mean, that's got to be for him, too, even though he's a superstar at the time. Mm-hmm. That's got to be something crazy for him. I was at that game. That was absolutely fantastic. When we usually get beat, though, Tony, whether a record's broken or not, I'm pretty much a salty dickhead. I am just, oh, he's not that good, dude. You kidding me? I could hit 11 threes against the Bulls right now. Yeah, I could hit 15 threes in a game against the Bulls. You know, you got Felatio guarding you, you're fine. You'll win. And Chris is a nice guy. I don't mean to hate on him too bad. But I know that you usually, when you're at the United Center, you're working. And
Chris is wiping his tears away with $100 bills. Don't worry about it.
God, man. You know, people hate him, and I don't know why. It's not like, dude, if I got offered that contract right now from the Bulls, which would never happen in a million years, but if I did, I'd sign that son of a bitch, too. Are you kidding me? $32 million for four years.
Guaranteed. Yeah, you can't pass up $32 million guaranteed.
No way, dude. And that's why people,
no matter what comes with it,
right? And people hate him. I'm like, dude, he didn't sign the contract. I mean, he signed it, but he didn't like make the contract. He was offered that contract. I would have signed it too. But like I was saying, I know that you know you're working most times at the game. And here at On Tap, man, we pride ourselves a lot on tailgating. I know you can't do it at the United Center, which I really wish they would add that in. I really wish we can, you know, get to the stadium a couple hours early, throw up a grill, and just have a nice time, even though it's cold as hell usually for the most part. But, you know, we're all Bears fans here, so we're used to it. But what's your favorite thing to drink at the stadium if you're just having a nice time and you're chillaxing?
I don't really drink. But the fountain cherry Coke there is something special. Like, I don't know what they put in it. I don't know what they do with it. But the cherry Coke that they have on tap there is something to behold. And I've been trying to figure out. I may do like a side piece on what's in this famed cherry Coke at the United Center that keeps fans coming back for more. So that's if they're not enjoying an alcoholic beverage. But yeah, that one gets me every time. And I try not to drink as much soda anymore, but man, I mean, whew.
Well, I worked at a gas station as a kid, and I can tell you the trick is probably an extra twist or two of the syrup bag that goes into the machine. It's just dripping a little more good stuff.
There's a syrup bag? Are you for real?
Yeah.
I thought they poured the drink in there. I didn't know.
No, man. It's like a syrup bag that gets mixed into the machine with the carbonated. It's weird. So, yeah, it's just twisted a little bit more.
What's your drink, Goose? I mean, I saw what you were drinking when we were having beers when you and I were there because we had a drive, so we couldn't get too crazy. But, I mean, what's your drink if you're chilling?
I usually just stick to whiskey, but I have been drinking the Rocks tequila lately just because I read something on the internet that said it's healthier than red wine for you. So I'm trying to be nice to my body.
That's
because
it burns your insides. It takes out all the toxins.
It's made with grapes and agave, man. It's
God.
So
God.
Hey, man, it gets the job done.
I know it gets the job done, but it got to burn like hell.
Usually whiskey. Buffalo Trace whiskey has been my go-to lately. The guy at Woodman's turned me onto that. It's got a fancy little cork popper. That's how I knew that I moved up in the world of whiskey when I didn't have a twist top anymore. When I pulled it, and made a, you know, it was good.
See, when I'm at the stadium, if I'm hanging out in the atrium, I'll do a couple Jack and Cokes when I'm down there. But if I'm like sitting there watching the game, and I know this sounds stupid, but like, growing up again, single father home for me, so it was my dad had those Bulls championship cups, you know, those plastic cups, and it said, "Come get a Bulls Mai Tai." So every time I'm there, I go get a Mai Tai because, like, I just remember drinking milk out of those cups when I was a little kid, and I love the Mai Tai when I'm at the United Center. I don't care if it's weird, I love that shit. It's so good. So that's my drink of choice while I am there. So now these are two fun questions we're going to get into. Well, I mean, not that the whole thing wasn't fun, but these are ones that Herb said you're an interesting cat. And I was like, you know, and I think I'm kind of a weird guy too, you know. So Herb was like, he's a weird, interesting guy, man. And I'm pretty close with Herb. I got to have drinks with Herb on a couple occasions, but I got to have drinks with him, Jason, and Herb Lawrence at Reggie's downtown for a White Sox event this past offseason when we thought baseball was going to be played. But he told me to ask you, this is the first one. I have it written down. I don't know if you guys can see on the camera, but it's on the Sports Illustrated with all the writing on it. It says, ask Tony his opinion on Michael Redd and Reggie Miller. So I had to write it down because he was adamant about it. He was like, you need to ask him. And I said, Herb, I will ask him. I want to hear about it too. So please give me the backstory on what this means.
Well, it originated from... First of all, I don't see what everybody else sees with Reggie Miller, and what everybody was so scared of in the 90s. I mean, he did one thing, didn't really do anything else, and I've seen players better than him at that one thing. That in terms of, like, you know, Ray Allen, like Cal Corbett, like, people have shot the ball better than Reggie Miller. So I'm like, I mean, if you guys think he's a Hall of Famer, I mean, that's fine. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. And so it kind of became like a running joke at the Score about my, not my, dis. I don't dislike Reggie Miller, but just, I just don't get it with the Reggie Miller thing. So then I started kind of just poking a bear a bit with people that were like adamant about Reggie Miller. I was like, all right, if Reggie Miller gets in the Hall of Fame, I want Michael Redd in the Hall of Fame. And I love Michael Redd. He's one of my favorite players, one of my top 10 on my list, top 10 favorite players of all time. He was like, outside of like Tony Kukoc, again, like when you're growing up and you want to play basketball, you're trying to try and pick a player that you can kind of pattern your game after, or just watch a player that, and I didn't see a lot of lefties. I'm a lefty.
Okay. So
it was like Tony Kukoc, and he was like a forward. It was like, well, I'm not tall. I can't be Tony Kukoc.
Right.
So the next best person that I saw was Michael Redd. So that's what I like. And Michael Redd, he He was better than a lot of people remember.
He was. Like, when his heyday in Milwaukee, he was really good. I'm 28, Tone. How old are you?
27.
Okay, so we're about the same age. Yeah. Michael Redd was a G, man. And people don't remember that. He's not talked about.
He's one of my favorite players of all time, and I know he's not going to get into the Hall of Fame, but that's kind of like my bit, my running on lifelong bit that, hey, if Reggie Miller's in the Hall of Fame, I need my guy, one of the greatest Milwaukee Bucks of all time, Michael Redd in the Hall of Fame, too.
Herb was just he was so taken back, like, when he told, because we stayed on the air, and or not on the air, but after we got done recording the podcast, I think Herb and Goose and I, we talked for about an hour after the podcast, like, just about nothingness, music, but we were talking about you, because me and you've had this lined up for about 3 weeks now, and, he was like, these are the questions you have to ask him, because he gets animate about it. And I'm just like, all right, Herb, thanks for the tidbits, man. You know, I'm excited to ask. And then Herb got into a topic which blew Goose away. And this was the Migos versus the Beatles.
Yeah.
and Herb was like, I don't get that guy, man. You guys are the same age, but I don't get that guy. I'm like, Herb, you're not old, Herb. You're not old. Like, you keep talking like you're old. And he was just like, no, I'm telling you. He's like, ask him about the Migos and the Beatles. Those are the two questions you need to ask him. So I wrote them both down. So you think the Migos are better than the Beatles. Is that correct?
No. That wasn't the original thought that I had. I remember this specifically. We were, I think it was me, Lawrence Holmes.
Was it one of the few times that you actually had a drink? Like, they got you to have a drink and this crazy idea came up?
No, and we were just discussing, and this was at the time, this was like Migos' heyday. Like, this was, everything was about the Migos in terms of pop music and popular music so far. And I was like, all right, I can make the comparison right now that they are this generation's Beatles in terms of a group with influences across the music board. At that point in time, they were so big that their influence could be felt throughout a bunch of different genres and in their own genre as well. I was like, they're this generation's Beatles. If I had to pick one, a group that had that type of influence, obviously not as big, obviously, as the Beatles, but I mean, for this generation, I think they had almost a similar impact.
Okay, I got you. I see.
They always, if you notice, they always like make the argument different to make it more outlandish, which is just fine. Like, we're radio guys.
I think they're little brothering you is what I think is happening right now. They're picking on their little brother. That's what I think is going on.
That's fine. That's fine. I get it. But yeah, those were the two original ideas that I'm gonna die with those bits. So those are my two things.
Dying on the Hill. I dig it. So I had never, I guess I didn't know who they were. I had never heard of the Migos. So I was like, okay, I'm going to, you know, pull this up. And then I saw Walk It Like I Talk It. And then I saw Racks Too Skinny. I was like, okay, I know who these guys are. I've heard this stuff. Pure Water, another song. Yeah. So I was just like, okay, I get it. But you know, it was just so funny how Herb kind of brought everything up and was just like, these are the questions you need to ask him about. Cause he gets passionate. And I know how Herb can get. Herb gets very passionate about what he's talking about. So even if you had like a little bit of an argument for him, whether it was Reggie Miller or Michael Redd or Migos versus Beatles, Herb, he's so passionate. He's like, nope, you're wrong. It's like, nope. I totally dig it, man. Goose, you got anything else, man?
I'm going to skip over the whole Migos Beatles thing just because I'm glad that we got a deeper explanation, because at least the explanation kind of, I can understand the thought process.
Yeah, Herb had your ass shocked.
We're going to throw a fun fact in here at the end for Derrick Rose's case to the Hall of Fame. His high school and college career are included in the case to be made, and the things that he did in his high school career are pretty extensive and got close to winning a title at Memphis too. So those accolades all go into consideration. It is the Basketball Hall of Fame, not the NBA Hall of Fame. So it's the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. So all of that stuff will get incorporated. So hopefully, even with just the youngest MVP ever on top of those accolades, he is in the Hall of Fame, deservingly so.
Man, I mean, the only thing with is his college eligibility. I don't know if they took away those because of what happened after he left, where
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, and that's the only thing. Will they count it? Is my thing.
I didn't
count it or not. I remember
they stripped almost everything to kind of, well, he didn't go there. Let's just kind of move on. He's already in the league. We're not going to do anything to further damage the NBA's newest star.
Right.
But I remember that coming up, and I don't think his college career actually counts if that ban still is a thing by the time he retires. I hope not, though.
Absolutely. Well, Tone, I really appreciate you coming on, man. I really hope, you know, you consider coming on again in the future just to sit and bullshit about, you know, current when basketball starts getting going again and we can talk about the team. I know you're a busy guy with all the stuff that you do over at NBCChicago.com. Everybody, please follow Tony if you're not. I'm sure you already are. But if you're not following Tony, it's at TheTonyGill on Twitter. Tone, man, thanks so much for coming on the podcast today, dude. It means a lot to us. I'm glad that we actually finally got to, you know, orchestrate this and make it happen.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Anytime you need them, just reach out, all right?
Absolutely. So everybody, be sure to go to ontapsportsnet.com for all your Chicago sports literature and podcasting needs. Following us on Twitter, at BullsOnTap, at OnTapSportsNet. Following Tony, at TheTonyGill. Following Goose, at BullsScripted. And follow me, at BuzzOnTap. We'll be back next week with another special guest. Still got to line that up, though. It's pretty much lined up, but I'll tease it on Twitter during the week. And we'll lead it out with Go Bulls.